I get to introduce Phyllis, which means that I get to say the thing that you'll never hear anywhere else. Phyllis has come to us from LA, and she's had a wonderful life. Met Baba in 52 after hearing about him. Some years before, she lived with Nadine and Norina and Elizabeth in New York, and Adele. She and Adele too. She's had an incredible background in the business world, and she's a little known fact is that she actually invented paint by numbers, and we found one more thing, short 90s. in her other life as a fashion designer.
Think about how much money you made.
That's
right.
Phyllis did it gratis to her employees. She's currently editor of The Awakener and a great archivist. I'm sure we're going to hear from her secret archives for years to come, we hope. So, without further ado, Phyllis Fredericks.
Well, I thought perhaps I'd talk a little bit and then open it all up for questions. I think that's kind of fun. And perhaps some of you haven't heard my story, so I might tell my story how I met Bob. Is that okay? Because it's sort of what people ask anyway. And I like to relive it. It's like, I always said about memories of Bob, they're really not memories. They're so living, like living tissue in you, that it isn't the past. It's like a living thing. Although I was amazed going through old diaries and things that I'd actually forgotten the direct, some little direct things that Baba said to me, and I've been going through archival material, letters and cables from Baba, and I'm really amazed. You do forget. I mean, it just seems impossible that you would forget what some Baba said to you. But the, you know, those real direct memories are just like an implanted thing in you. And I won't go too much in my background with my youth and all that stuff. It's very boring and sort of typical of my time. But I was a seeker of sorts, and in those days, you wouldn't have the opportunity, as you have now, of bookstores with metaphysical books and reprints of interesting mystical texts and that just didn't exist. I used to go down to this huge old bookstore where you got secondhand books on 3rd Avenue, 2nd Avenue or something in New York. And there I would dig through all the bins of old texts and find out something, especially I was getting into Eastern philosophy after getting really kind of fed up with college philosophy and started on psychology, studying Jung and stuff. And I also was having a lot of very odd experiences. I have to talk about them because that was sort of part of my path. Interesting or difficult or unusual things. Some of them were just plain psychic things like seeing dead people, or some quote dead people, and seeing a little bit of the future. And one time in my apartment in New York, was an apartment on 11th Street. The wall just became transparent, and I saw the guy next door lying in his bed drinking beer. But later on, my mother wanted to rent the apartment to him. I said, "Don't, mother. He's a drinker." But she didn't listen to me. So he did wreck our apartment. Little tiny weird thing. But to find out what was going on, I kind of studied, you know, first a lot about psychic phenomena, found that I wasn't as weird as my contemporaries and the intellectual world of the day would say. There have been innumerable people with innumerable experiences, similar ones. And then I was having what would be more of a mystical type of experience, and also some very strange, interesting visions. I remember Easter morning, this very beautiful vision of the Buddha He was seated on a fountain. It was seven fountains, you know, like that. And he was going like this. And he was looking straight in my eyes with beautiful sapphire blue eyes, a lovely smile. And around the bottom was a whole circle of people. And the way visions are, they don't make sense in gross world technology or something. But you could see each face, tiny as it was, just crystal clear. And all these faces of Easterners and Westerners around. And I thought, that's interesting, a vision of Buddha on Easter Sunday, Easter morning. And then one of the most significant ones was in the Vedanta Center in New York. I'd gotten as far into Hindu thought as I could and went there. There was a very fine scholar who ran it, Nikalananda. He translated the Gospels of Sri Ramakrishna. And I went there one Sunday. There was a beautiful big photo of Ramakrishna over here, and it just disappeared. It was like white light coming out of it. And a voice coming out of it saying, "He is your Jesus." And I look over, and coming out on the little platform was this man in a long white robe with flowing hair, auburn reddish hair, very dynamic face, and he was, you know, was speaking and gesturing too. And he was speaking in ancient Aramaic. But I knew, you know, the English too. It was like the Sermon on the Mount. And I was just fascinated. I just, you know, vision of Jesus. And then I kind of went like that. And everybody had left. So it must have been an hour. You know, it was an hour, usually an hour's talk. Mm-hmm. So I go home and I think, that's amazing. And then I kept seeing the faces of people, especially a face of a woman, very dynamic looking with very big black eyes and a turban on. And another woman who had blue eyes and said, "Attendez le maître parfait," which means wait for the perfect master. And another woman who was driving a car in sort of a robe going into the sky. She offered me a ride in her car. So not too long after that, a couple of weeks later, I get this invitation in the mail. It said, Princess Machiavelli, and in small type, a disciple of Mirabai, is giving a talk on love is the solution. So I thought, well, that sounds exciting. I've been to all sorts of centers and groups in New York, looking around for, you know, I've been to the Theosophy Center, Rosicrucian, this, that, and none of them really had, they just didn't seem to know the whole picture. They seemed to be rather, and the people there weren't very, you know, I didn't respond to them. So I go to this talk, and Narina comes out on the stage, and it's a white gown and a turban. She always wore a turban. Mm-hmm. You know, you've probably seen pictures of that. So I recognized her face as this woman I'd seen. And at the door was Nadine Tolstoy, and she was the one that had said, "Attendez le maître parfait." And later on, I met Elizabeth, the woman who invited me in her car. Mm. As you know, her car was like another part of her body. She was the driver, you know, when Baba had his accident. She'd driven an ambulance in the war and all that. She was an expert driver. So right away, I was invited to have tea with them. There were no pictures of Baba at this talk. But I had tea, I guess, with Nadine. The first time, and her room was full of Baba pictures, and especially was a little one by the door with Baba with his flowing hair, bending down, patting the dog, and it was just so clear that this was the man I'd seen, you know, on the stage at the Vedanta Center, and it was like Ramakrishna saying, "He is your Jesus, you know, here is Jesus." And it's interesting, in the history of the Baba world, several other people were kind of led to Baba by, like, visions from Ramakrishna. But that's another part of the story. But anyway, I got very close to them. They had been sent over from India in 1941, after they'd been with Baba in India, to spread his message there in New York. And outside of Malcolm Schloss in Hollywood, with his small poetry circle and all, there was no Baba work being done in the West, in America anyway. So I was invited to live with them, and I was getting closer I wrote to Bob, of course, we could write to Bob. And I got my first letter back. And she was written by Margaret Crass, the hand of Margaret Crass. And it said basically, Bob is very happy that you've come to him and, you know, love blessings. It was just a beautiful letter. And we always were in contact with Bob. But there were always these ups and downs. He may come, he may not come, he may drop the body, he may, you know. And it was wartime. We didn't know whether we would ever actually see Baba, you know. He was hoping to come, and he had told these three women to get ready and find a spiritual place for him, a center at that time. And just then, Elizabeth gets into this property that was given by her father to her in Myrtle Beach. And so all those years we were working on it. We went down there and lived, you know, off and on from there to New York and back and forth to get this huge hunk of raw land ready for Baba. Then comes the new life in 48. After the war was over, we thought, well, maybe we could travel and see Baba. And actually, Baba called for Noreen and Elizabeth. Nadine, meanwhile, had passed away, to come to India, 47. And Noreen said to me, well, what do you want me to tell Baba? I said, well, I want to come to India, you know. And actually, for 2 weeks, Baba went around saying, well, should she come or should I ask her, you know. And I heard this, Narina was writing it. Fantastic. God is actually thinking of me. I didn't even, you know, it wasn't like, I don't care what he thought, but it was such a thing. Then the answer was no, I would meet him in America. And finally the day comes in 52. The house was ready for him and all that. And we weren't allowed to go to the airport and meet him. He came with his 12 disciples, 6 women, 6 men. Mayor Imani, Gover, Mayru, Rana and Kitty were the women. And then Adele and myself, well, first we knew exactly where Baba would be. He'd have to take the train, and the train would have to come out of Penn Station. It would have to be the midnight train. So I said to Adele, let's go down and peek at Baba, you know. This huge Penn Station, there are balconies up. They've torn it down. So we went and we hid behind these big pillars. And I said, oh, there's Baba, you know. And Baba, meanwhile, got out his board and, you know, the fella up there. We saw Donkin and Mayor and everyone standing down on this level waiting. So then we got a letter from Baba, Adele and myself, because she had also had moved in. She was the only friend of my peer group that took to Baba, the rest of them. We got a letter. Baba said, would you like to be my guest at the center for 3 weeks? Well, yes, Baba. Then comes another letter, 2 weeks. Yes, Baba. We had been primed, you know, that Baba would do these changing plans, except. Finally, the last one was 1 week, yes, Bob. So we were actually his guests for a whole week. And a whole week with the Avatar is a lot, believe me. It seems now like just an incredible length of time. But so that actual day that I met Baba was May 10th, 1952, in the little cabin. Some of you have been there to Myrtle Beach, the Lagoon Cabin. And it was Delia who introduced me. And they were calling Baba, then Shri Mayor Baba. So she said, Shri Mayor Baba, this is Phyllis Fanning. So this moment that I had waited for, and it wasn't like waiting one lifetime, believe me. You know you've been waiting a long time. And my first glimpse of Baba was just incredible, his eyes. And I thought, you know, you don't know what Baba will look like to you. You have no idea. Listen to other people and everything. You don't really know exactly. And my immediate thought was, Baba looks Egyptian. He had these long eyebrows and long eyes. Anyway, he gave me this tremendous hug and then beckoned me to sit down. His greeting was so loving and so warm. And he didn't say very many words, but I remember he said, I've heard about you from this one and that, from Elizabeth, Dawn, Margaret, and heard you from within. That was very beautiful. He heard me from within. Then he asked me
do you love me? That's Baba's first question, yours. I said, yes, Baba. And he said, do you know where that love is coming from? And at that moment, he made me feel the love coming. Really, it was like almost a physical thing, a stream of love coming from his heart through my heart and then back to him. Like the love really was his love. And I feel that I don't really love Baba. It's his gift that he's given to me, you know, and I give it back to him. Because I don't think, and he says that in Beings, you know, God gives the gift of love to the lover and then forgets the gift so he can enjoy the love. And I think that's the mystery, the whole mystery and the whole mission of Baba is this love that he gifts you with, because you really, as an ordinary human being, it's pretty impossible just to say, hey, I love God, you know. So, and Baba says it in lots of ways, I've come to sow the seed of love in your heart. And I think that's his main work, outside of other mixings around with the world history and stuff. His main work is to drop the seed of love in your heart, and then it flowers whenever or however your particular relation is, or whatever stage you're in, and so on. But I always am thankful to God, to Baba, that he gives me this gift. And my only prayer, really, to God has always been, don't take that love away. Don't take that love away. You know, that would be it. You know, if Baba drops the body, or I don't see him for 700, no, I've got to have that love. That's the only thing. Because without it, it's just, to me, kind of a totally empty world. That love for God is so precious. And many moments, Baba gives you this increase of love, even in the real mystical sense. You're just bathed in love and just dissolved in this relationship with him. Outside of seeing him physically, you know, that inner feeling. And yet when you're with him physically, there are moments, too, when he seems very absent. And other moments when you don't feel the love at all, and that seems so terrible, you know? You don't expect that. You think you're always going to be up here the first few days, and then suddenly you're just, well, I don't have it anymore. It's gone, you know? And so you realize your mind is just constantly in flux. You are in illusion in the world, and your sense character nature is such that it's just like clouds going over the sun. The love is always there, really, but you don't always feel it, even though he's sitting right next to you and so on. But he was very kind to Adele and myself. We were living right there on the center, and his program for the day was usually to get up very early and come to the guest house, the girls' house, where they made tea for him. But he would get out of the car, Adi would drive the car, and we would jump out of the cabin there and get a hug from Baba to begin the day with. That was marvelous to begin the day. And then he would spend the day on the center with us, not with the women. They were in the guest house, like in seclusion, except for Rana and Kitty, the Westerners. And then in the evening, Baba would take his supper there, and we would be invited to be there, Adele and I, with all the women there, Kitty, Margaret, Delia, Elizabeth, and the women from India. And that was the most precious moment, to be there with all the women. Right after I met Baba with this hug, you know, then he gestured toward the guest house, and I met Mayor and Moni and those people for the first time. And next to meeting Baba, meeting Mayra and his sister and all those lovely women was a very special privilege. And so we spent the day with Baba. We went walking on the beach with him, and he gave interviews in the cabin. Other people met him, and so on. Then there was the big day coming up, the open day, where anyone could come, like an open darshan, and invitations had been sent out. I think a total of about 700 people came. And Baba, the day before, gave us little jobs to do. We were seated in the lagoon cabin, about 20 of us, and he gave little jobs. He gave Adele and myself the job to watch the back door of the barn. People came in the front door to meet Baba, so we'd see them walk down this long way through the barn and greet Baba, and then he told us not to let them wander out in the jungle. And it was true, several people were just so, you know, they could have stumbled into the bushes. And one man, he was just, you know, he's really, Baba really gave him an experience. And he stood on the porch, and I thought, well, he's a big guy, I can't shove him down the steps, you know, I'm supposed to show him down the steps. Of course, Baba reads your thought instantly, turn around, you know, let him stay. So. Baba did read your thoughts, but always with Baba, though, he never put on any kind of air of power, so to call it, but little teeny things were fun, you know, like, he had a little thought, you know, show that he knew. Between you and he. It's like if there were a whole group here and Baba were here, you would feel you're having a little whole thing with Baba on your own. And everyone else would feel the same thing. He's just in communication with each soul. It's just so beautiful. At the same time, he's with you as a group. And little things were going on all the time. Baba would turn to you and say, what are you thinking? You know? And he knew that that moment, you know. And that was what I was saying. The first few days, were just up days, and then suddenly while I was seated, and this was I was seated with the women, just, all of a sudden I had these terrible sex thoughts, you know, all these terrible words you don't want to think about. And here was Baba, you know, sitting 3 feet away from me. He was bringing up all this. So Baba left and said, and what are you doing? And I said, oh boy, this, you know, I've heard about Baba doing this. So I said, I'm thinking of you, Baba. You know, you weren't going to come out. But, you know, it just, and it lasted for about a day, and then it all vanished. But it was, you know, it's just like taking scum off the top of a soup. He boils it up. Does it too. And then walking on the beach was very special with Bob. I have to tell my worry operation story. This was this one morning. I had jumped out of bed. I said, you know, I've been so good all along. I haven't been bad. You know, you're kind of afraid you're going to goof up somewhere. And then Baba that morning looked a little different. He looked a little more stern, and he had his cane, and he came over and he tapped my leg. Baba has said that ordinary sadgurus to remove your red sanskaras. They might beat you up or do something physical like that. But the avatar doesn't. He just touches you. So to be touched by me, sometimes he would knock you on the shoulder with the alphabet board. Or one time he came and put his finger on my head here. Or he'd go like this, you know, and just sort of like a secret, come over and give me a kiss here, you know. Little things, but physical. So anyway, this day came over and hit my leg with it, tapped it with his cane. I thought, uh-oh. Anyway, we went walking on the beach, and I was talking animatedly to Mayra about gardening. She and I, you know, shared this whole thing. The women were in. And so Baba went ahead. You know, he walks very fast. And then we came up to him, and he was looking very stern. They were doing like this, and they were talking in Gujarati, and they're pointing to me and everything. And then Monty translates that Baba's very upset. Why didn't I show them the way back to the center? Why do you pass the path where you go back to the center? And I was amazed. I didn't know I was supposed to show them. And I've been talking to Mara. I didn't know, you see, that they don't make a move except that Mara makes. So she was talking to me, and we went past, you see. It was all a mystery to me. But I was so upset. It was the first time Baba was not happy with me. And that's a big shock, you see. I've never gone through that. So my mind was going like this. Oh, she didn't know the path, you know. Those weird things. So we're walking home, and Baba gestures, you know, and Monty translates. Phyllis, Baba says, stop worrying. And I couldn't stop. He said that 3 times in my mind. And I did have that kind of mind that once it gets onto something, it spins and spins and spins, you know. So then Baba beckoned me up, and he took my left hand, and he took my wrist like that with his right hand, you know. And I felt this sort of
energy go up. And it just blotted out my head completely. I just, you know, from there on, it was just, couldn't even remember it. I didn't even remember it, the whole thing, till the afternoon. I was telling Adele that. And since that time, I really can't worry. That's why I call it the warrior. I mean, you know, surface things, you have some anxiety or something. But never, you know, that thing where you just grind and grind and grind down on yourself and get down. So it seemed now that Baba created this kind of artificial stirring up of that I'd done something wrong, which actually kind of hadn't, but get me all stirred up. But Baba had a great sense of humor. There were many delightful moments with him. Like when he showed us through his house, they had put in a bell, Elizabeth, so he could ring the mandolin. So Baba says, come here, you know. Then he rings this bell, this huge bong. He loved it when we all jumped in. You know, he's just got that little touch of humor. And at the open day, all these people came to see Baba, including quite a number of black people. I noticed that Baba always stood up when a black person came, and he embraced them that way. And I thought, well, that means, you know, great things for the black people in America. And it's true, that was 52. And in the fall, finally, you know your history, they signed the Civil Rights, the Supreme Court ratified it or whatever. And, you know, Bob is doing this. He would say many times, I'm sitting here with you, but meanwhile, I'm working all over the universe. So, obviously, you feel, and all the other sabbaths that I was with Baba, that he's attending to you as a unique individual, and he's working as a group, your group sanskaras, your national or cultural sanskaras. But as a whole group, he's using you like a battery, like a keyboard for all humanity. Each one of those sabbaths were at a critical time in politics, too, like in 56. That one day was skipping ahead to another service with Bob at the center. Very hot day, early in the morning, and Bob looked just drained. You know, he said, the world is weighing on me, and universal work was very difficult. And then he wanted us to stand in four different positions, like the four points of the compass. Bob stood here, and we stood opposite him, quiet, and he moved here, and, you know, he boxed the compass. And worked very intensely, you know. You can see it in some of the movies, you know, the handles, I think. And that very day was the Suez Crisis. And if you remember history, that there was a big commotion, and then France was going to rush in, and Israel and all that, and then it just stopped it, you know. It was really like the brink of the Third World War. The same with 62, definitely. The first morning we were there in India with Bob. Again, Bob says, how do I live? And everybody says, Bobby, you look wonderful. Okay, no, we didn't actually. By that time, he was pretty, you know, his physical condition was poor. And he said, but inside, I'm like a volcano. The world was on the brink of the Third World War, but I put a stop to it. And you remember how the Cuban Missile Crisis, we had just left America right at the peak of that, and how the Russians backed off. Nobody yet, Kennedy or anybody's ever figured out why. You know, it was just cold, stopped, you know. So Bob obviously used us in that kind of way. And also the Tibetan, you know, communists were coming over the border of India. And this was in 62. Some man from the Times said, Baba, who's going to win this war? Because India was at war. They had canceled, actually, planes. The Australians didn't get there because of their canceled planes. So much later. Baba said, I feel myself in everyone, in both sides. Which always, you know, has really impressed me. I feel myself in everyone. But because I'm the avatar, and I've taken birth in India will win. And, you know, it was translated, everything Baba said was translated first in English, and then Gujarati, and then Marathi, and then Hindi, and then Telugu was the longest. The guy that got up and did the Telugu, Baba said good morning, you know, he took my hat. He got longer. So the big shouts went up from the troops, you know, as they understood that. So,
Baba did use and serve in a universal way. You even felt that, like, I'm Phyllis Frederick, but I'm also an American girl. I'm a certain type, white wasp, or whatever labels people stick on me. But, you know, obviously, I'm something. And you felt Baba pinching your energy. You know, when Dr. Duncan visited us in 48, people asked him about the must. What does Baba do with must? And Doc says, we never know, but I think he pinches their energy. And you actually, with Baba, a day with Baba, aside from the heat, because you all seem to be there in hot weather, he pinches your energy. You definitely feel very strange at the end of the day. But then it all revived. And then Baba had, in 52, this incredible accident. And that was a big shock. Especially when you don't get the news right away about how badly anybody's hurt. But he did come back to New York, which gave some people who hadn't met him in, you know, in Myrtle Beach, a chance to see him. He gave Darshan in New York at Ivy Deuce's place for 3 days, the three hottest days. It was over 98. And no air conditioning in those days. And I was kind of lucky then because there was an injured group. There was Mayra, and Elizabeth was injured, Baba with his casts, and all that. And he wanted a certain house that would be half an hour out of New York, and nobody looking into the garden. There should be a garden, and this and that room for 18 people. And nobody was able to find this house for 2 weeks. It was supposed to be something like 10 days. And I had once, just once, had tea with this lady in Scarsdale, Kate Ferris. So boldly I call her up and say, Kate, Mrs. Ferris, Mrs. Ferris, would you like to loan your house to Sri Mayra? Oh, yes, yes, I would. So Baba was pleased. It was just exactly the right thing. All the neighbors who looked down on her garden suddenly took off for those 2 weeks. So that condition. But I had to get the whole house ready, and I had just had this new job with a doctor. And I would leave every other day and go out to Scarsdale. And I'm the worst housekeeper. I don't know anything. I'm just the worst person. But Bob said, no, you have to get it ready. You know, for sick people and food and a maid to cook. So I did my best. And people helped. But it was interesting that sort of from also, Baba wanted a boy to take care of him at night, but he was supposed to be a certain age and certain strength and height, and not a Baba lover. So they were looking for boys all over the place, dragging him off the street. And finally, the last day, Baba was coming, the next day or something. And suddenly I thought of my cousin up in Schenectady. So I call him up, Keith, what are you doing? Oh, I'm painting the house for Dad. Oh, want to earn some money, but I was going to pay. Oh, but my dad's giving me help. But he's such a sick man. He needs your help. He's in a wheelchair. So Keith said, all right, I'll come. I said, but you have to come at 5 tomorrow morning. He did come, my cousin. And he could read Baba's board. Now, that wasn't easy. I could read it very rapidly. And he could read it upside down, which you have to do. So, and he did beautifully this whole thing, like you're not supposed to look at Mayra. I mean, here's a kid in college, you know, beans about Baba, told you're not supposed to look, you know. And we had some interesting trips with Baba. I'm still in 52, folks, but I'll never get to 60. But one thing was kind of amusing. Baba invited me out to lunch at Scratch. And the sweet thing, he said, what kind of ice cream do you like? In those days, there were only strawberry chocolate. So I said, strawberry, and Baba ordered strawberry ice cream. Those little things stick with you more than tons of discourses on the plane. Anyway, I had the lunch with Baba, this very lovely occasion. And there was Charmy Deuce. She's looking at tickets. I said, well, Charmin, what are you doing? She said, oh, we're taking Baba to the movies this afternoon to see Charlie's Aunt at RCA, this big movie theater. So I thought, oh, So when I left there, I jumped on the train, got a cab, went to RCA, this huge theater. I said, where will they bring Bob? Well, probably the first balcony. So I took a seat in the first balcony, and sure enough, the party showed up, Bob in the wheelchair and the woman, to see Charlie's Aunt. And I get this little tap on the shoulder, Bob has sent Charmy over. Then I got so excited about Bob being in the theater with Bob, and I get another tap on the shoulder. Phyllis, pay attention to the movies. And immediately my mind was like... And then, of course, Bob left in the middle of the movie. And years later, somebody invited me to see it. I walk in exactly where. But I was allowed to wheel Baba down the wheelchair all alone in the elevator while Charmy and the girls went off to get the car. So I was all alone in the elevator with him in the wheelchair. So I bent down, kissed his ear. You know, he couldn't get away. I had to to myself. And the funny part was, in this theater, I was sitting next to the two nuns, you know, and I was just dying. Anyway, Baba came in 56 again after he had healed from this bad accident in America, which actually, this was a strange thing. When he came to this house in Scarsdale in this wheelchair and the nose broke and the teeth coming off. So he smiles at me and he said, how do I look? I said, beautiful, wow. So he said, America was after my blood for a long time. Too much. But he came back in 56 and allowed us to travel with him. So that was a wonderful thing that we traveled with Baba in New York, Myrtle Beach, Hollywood, and then San Francisco. And I did write it up in The Awakening, The Journey of the Heart. I took down all these notes. It was the most fantastic trip. It was actually a little more than 2 weeks. And again, being Baba that amount of time was incredible. And all the sanskaras of everything mixed together, you know, about, I think it was about 80 people traveled with Baba, plus the crowds that came in Hollywood and Myrtle Beach in New York. Lots of fascinating details. Then Baba went up to Marymount. We spent a day there with Baba. That's where he said something interesting about Southern California. Fred Winterfeld made some joke about, you know, Los Angeles being a place where all the kooks and crazy groups are. You know, we've always had this reputation. Next to India. Southern California is a place where the veil between the worlds is gross and subtle as thinnest. And of course that stimulates it. I thought that was kind of interesting. And then in San Francisco, one of the most interesting times we had was toward the end. Imagine we traveled almost really 3 weeks with Baba, and behind the scenes, a lot of things Baba was working on, the sanskaras of a lot of people. We weren't ever to know totally all the details, but apparently certain people got real upset with each other about money. So then suddenly Baba calls us in one morning at the end of the whole trip, looking very stern, but like I say, stern in one eye and twinkling in the other. You know. And he asks each person involved in this kerfuffle, that's my word now since I visited Australia, kerfuffle. To stand up and give their piece. Like one woman complained that her husband gave, she was a Sufi, and her husband gave too much money to the Sufis, and that she had poor children, they need to be educated, blah, blah, blah. So Baba looks at her and said, and what if there's an earthquake here, and in 1 minute, everything is gone, your husband, your children, your family, your home, house. Then what is important? So she thinks a minute, she said, well, God. And Baba said, yes. And then he said, now, I forgive you all your sanskaras up to this moment. He had said that also in Myrtle Beach on this trip once before. First he asked all of you who love me, raise your hand.
all of you obey me. Actually, but he said that in Myrtle Beach. I'm going back now. And one man didn't raise his hand. And Baba said, get up and explain. He said, Baba, I don't think I can obey you. And Baba said, try. That's all I ask, that you try. He was more honest than the rest of us, really. But so again, in after straightening up this complicated fuss with these people, we weren't involved, but still with Baba looking at you, you think, well, you've got all these sanskaras too. It just happens that these people are up here on the stage. But then Baba said, do you love me? Yes. Do you obey me? Yes. Now come, I forgive you all your sanskaras up to this point. Now come and embrace me. That was the most wonderful embrace. It's like forgiveness. You know? It was just heaven to embrace Baba. And then he said, I want you all to say the prayer of repentance. And nobody knew what that was. And Kitty had to run out and get a copy. That's when I swore I'd really memorize, you know, the prayers. But that wonderful moment. And then that afternoon, there was a little quake. And Baba did then go on to Australia. And as we said goodbye to him in that airport, it was so incredible. I guess maybe all the emotion of being 3 weeks with Baba, just we all were standing there crying, and Baba would go around like this, you know. You know, I don't know why we all, the waterworks are just incredible. And so it was a big circle there in the airport, and Baba moving around. And this one man came rushing, you know, someone comes running kind of through the airport and stopped. And then Baba, and he said, I was next to him, he said, who is that man? And I said, oh, he's the Messiah. He stood there and he looked at Baba and said, very well, might be. And I thought that was so neat. The same thing happened in Hollywood in the Roosevelt, with people milling around and seeing Baba. And it was in the hotel there, and this very nice girl came by and she asked me, what's going on here? You know, you could feel it, something special happened. I said, well, the Messiah's in that room there. He's giving me an interview. And she said, oh, do you think I could see him? And I said, yes, yes, of course. And I went up to Adi, and she got taken in, and she came out and said, thank you. You know, just I thought, what a soul. You know, and here we've struggled through years before Baba came with people in groups. Oh, but the avatar, but the Christ, but the Bible says, we'll ask you to, you know. No, someone just goes like that. That's a calm idea. So Baba came back in 58, very, very in pain with his dislocated hip. You all know the story. But he never showed it when he was with us. We had a wonderful Sabbath with Baba. But each time I met Baba, it was like a new renewing of a relationship. And I could say that it became more and more internalized, my relationship with Baba, even if he was there. You know, it was like I was getting more of an inner communion with Baba rather than just... And I think Baba does that. You know, he'll pour on all his attention to you outwardly in the beginning because that's what you need, but then you kind of hopefully get more into just a silent communication. He spends his time with other people and stuff. And in 62, he was even more remote in a sense, physically, from all of us. We weren't allowed to have private interviews with him. No questions were to be asked, either material or spiritual. We were promised that before we went. But to see Bob in his own background in India was really fascinating. We were all about 8,000 to 10,000 people every day there together on these little benches, you know, in front of Baba at Guru Prasad. We, the Westerners, are, I guess we're about 250 or even more or less there. We spent the morning with Baba and Guru Prasad, more intimate. But again, no private meetings. And then in the afternoon with all the Indians, we took darshan and listened to all his wonderful music. There's so much, so many kinds of music in India that you never dream of. You know, he over here at that time anyway, it was like Ravi Shankar. It's what you call Indian music. That's only one particular kind. It was all kinds of the Qawwalis and the Bhajans and the Kirtan music and this. And all the best performers came, individual singers and so on. We just shared sabas with Baba. Like Baba would stop them and interpret the song of the Qawwali. There was one moment when the Qawwali was singing, you know, "Oh, give me but a drop of your ocean of bliss." And Baba looked at us and he gestured.